You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025. And I've mentioned this before, but I've never done anything in particular on it. The irritation that I've expressed in the constant predictions of World War III. There isn't an article on foreign policy that doesn't contain something like this. There are millions of articles now, and idiots claiming that this is a certainty, and it's not just over the last few decades. It goes back to the 60s. But over the last decade at least, it's very difficult to find an article in international politics that doesn't mention this coming World War III, that is to say, a nuclear war that will destroy the planet. Every move made by politicians, any war that begins, it's met by the same prediction. It never comes true. But it does have a purpose. It's used to shock readers, to draw them into a narrative. Although I think today that might be wearing off because of the constant, nonstop predictions. But really, as I've read elsewhere, how smart is it to talk about threats of nuclear war constantly? Andrew Gorbiko cited some idiot named Martin Armstrong. He's one of these Protestant weirdos. He claims to be an investment guru. He said that there's a 100% chance of a nuclear war. Of course, he's a guru of nothing. Armstrong says the chances of war with nuclear exchange is at 100%. Planning on it, it's coming. This is extremely obnoxious. You have a lot of the Protestant fundamentalists talking about this all the time, for years. The point is, though, it's to invoke fear, to draw people into your orbit, to make them weak. Fear leads to weakness and suggestibility. Now, Armstrong is an idiot of the first order because he claims that he's predicted every major financial crisis over the last however many decades. I don't know if this has to do with, he's not a billionaire, so the claim is obviously a lie. And with no solid evidence, he makes these wild claims. This is senseless. And it's been well studied, and it's been propagated by institutions like Tavistock, the Institute of Human Relations in Britain. And we know that they do. President Trump bombed Iran. He said something to the effect that he hopes that bombing will lead to lasting peace, and maybe some people even believed him. The current head of NATO, of course, who's installed by the U.S., NATO is a creation of the U.S., they benefit from the fear of the constant World War III prediction. Fear and submissiveness. People like Armstrong and so many of these other Protestants are just one part of the civilian branch of the regime, however minor they might be. But more important are those heads of government who talks about this all the time. All their fake elections coming out of the WEF and the American Ivy Leagues. Mark Rutte, as you know, the former Dutch Prime Minister, head of NATO, he's a product of this mentality. He's trying to make sure that the 30 European NATO members, the other two, of course, are the U.S. and Canada, become Orwellian experiments. War is peace and peace is war. The U.S. has a minimum $1.3 trillion military budget. There's off-budget things, and there's aspects of defense and other parts of the budget that are not included in the $1.3 trillion. I've talked about this before. A lot of that is to renew and build up the nuclear arsenal, to be made perfectly functional in every way by 2035. A lot of these weapons have not been maintained over the years. The EU is seeking a €1 trillion military budget by 2030, which I doubt exclusively to go to war with Russia, although Russia doesn't threaten the EU at all. That's stated by Ursula von der Leyen, president of the European Commission, who is totally unelected, and it's a fraud in almost every way. It's made public and spoken of all the time to spread fear. World War III is almost an impossibility because it would wipe them out as well. Putin was the only one really saying that a nuclear war is unpredictable and it has no winners. What leader, in at any level, will be seeking to wipe himself out, children, grandchildren, whoever? It's not a suicide pact. Now, some of that is an exaggeration, but they think it's true. Now I want to go to the Council on Foreign Relations. It's an article from January 28th of this year, 2025. It's called Weathering the Storm, the Hague Summit and the Future of NATO. It's by Stephen Sestanovich. I'm going to be quoting from it and commenting on it too. Here's how they start it. As the world has become more dangerous in 2024, the use of its most dangerous weapons has become more likely. This trajectory raises the stakes for the new Trump administration as it tries to end wars in Europe and the Middle East, and more broadly, to reverse the ominous path toward the use and proliferation of nuclear weapons that have been accelerated by these conflicts. That's not true, by the way. Vladimir Putin's become more aggressive in Ukraine last year, engineering the collapse of the nuclear guardrails built over several decades between the U.S. and Russia, lowering the threshold for the use of nuclear weapons. He announced that Russian nuclear forces were on full combat alert, and soon followed with military exercises to test the readiness of Russia's non-strategic nuclear forces in a combat scenario. I don't know why that's... The U.S. is doing the same thing. Russia's under attack. I don't know what else it would do. Putin capped last year by launching Russia's new hypersonic ballistic missile against targets in Ukraine, while formally announcing revised nuclear doctrine that lowered the threshold for use of nuclear weapons to meet a conventional threat to Russian territory. Well, the Israelis do that too. The revised doctrine also states that an attack on Russia by a non-nuclear power with the participation or support of a nuclear power will be seen as a joint attack on Russia. Well, sure, that's pretty common. That has nothing to do with nuclear weapons, though. Now they say, prior to the war in Ukraine, it was very rare for American or Russian leaders to imply a threat of nuclear weapons. Putin's threats have dramatically shifted the lexicon of nuclear use, lowering the psychological barrier for use and reopening the debate in Ukraine on whether a nation needs a nuclear deterrent. Such rhetoric, combined with the change in strategic doctrine, again, they're repeating themselves, lower the threshold for using nuclear weapons, not only in the current conflict, but in future ones. Furthermore, Putin must recognize that to maintain deterrence, he cannot keep issuing threats before action is eventually required. So, what it seems like they're doing here is giving a justification for giving Ukraine nuclear weapons. Can you imagine that fourth world country, without much of an economy, trying to maintain a nuclear weapons arsenal? This is absolute garbage. He has not made these threats. He's done the opposite. Only the U.S. has done this. The stupidity continues. Russia's need for support in the Ukraine war and the consequent 2024 Russia-North Korea Mutual Defense Treaty made it more likely that an unpredictable North Korea will gain more sophisticated nuclear knowledge and technology. Russia also led the effort in the UN to ease the pressure on North Korea's nuclear program by vetoing a resolution that would have extended the mandate on the panel tasked with reporting on North Korea's compliance with UN sanctions. These developments, on the heels of North Korea's announcement that it would no longer seek reunification or reconciliation, with South Korea have reopened debates in both South Korea and Japan on whether a non-nuclear status still serves their national security interests. Now, the stupidity here is extraordinary. There is no need for North Korean support. However, part of the defense pact is that North Korean men, a handful, will gain combat experience by being sent to Ukraine. None of this has anything to do with the DPRK gaining any sophisticated nuclear knowledge, since they've already built nuclear weapons. Sanctions on North Korea, of course, are going to be vetoed by Russia. UN sanctions don't have any place there anyway. And as far as South Korea or Japan is concerned, they're under the so-called American nuclear umbrella, with nuclear submarines not that far off their coasts. Then they continue. Similarly, the Middle East war has undermined nuclear guardrails. Again, Iran may become a nuclear weapon state in response to Israel's debilitating attacks on it and its proxies. This, in turn, has unleashed speculation as to whether Israel would preempt such a possibility by escalating the conflict with a direct attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. Iran's closer cooperation with Russia and China has also increased concerns about further cooperation on developing Iran's nuclear capacity. All right, now nuclear capacity is not the same thing as nuclear weapons. We know that their prediction, at least in this case, was true. They probably knew it already. Israel did attack Iran's nuclear facility, as well as the U.S., and failed miserably. Looming over the deterioration of the nuclear guardrails, this is the third time they've used that phrase. So I went to search for it, and all mainstream publications use it that came out after this article. This shows you how these phrases, these stupid slogans, get spread. Then they continue, and they say that China has lowered the nuclear threshold, and China's rapid expansion of its nuclear force in 2024. U.S. Defense Department said this about it. China probably perceives that a stronger nuclear force is needed to deter U.S. intervention, check potential nuclear escalation on first strike, and will allow for increased control of the scope and scale of escalation during a conflict in a way its previously smaller and less diverse nuclear force could not. Okay, that in and of itself is a delusion. China doesn't really need that to deter the U.S. China is a superior economy and a superior military power. Now, here's where they get, speaking of rails, they go off the rails. Further raising the nuclear risk levels are advanced technologies. AI can dangerously automate the command and control of nuclear weapons. The increased role of nuclear energy to address climate change could increase the spread of nuclear weapons, unless diligently addressed. As if these aren't the people who decide what gets addressed and what is not. This is just fear-mongering, that AI is going to go, you know, rogue and launch weapons for no reason. President-elect Donald Trump has indicated resolving the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East is top priority. But solutions to these conflicts must include reversing the acceleration towards the use and spread of nuclear weapons. There has been no use and no spread of nuclear weapons. Risk reduction measures are a feasible starting point. Russia signaled that it hasn't totally dismissed the need for these type of measures, with its notification in advance to the Pentagon before its November launch of its ballistic missile strike in Ukraine. I don't know what that has to do with nuclear weapons. The U.S. controls Ukraine, has engaged in attacks on Russian civilian infrastructure, so they're going to use the hypersonics that the U.S. still doesn't have to fight back. Now, this is just a complete falsehood. They say China and India's reported roles in signaling Putin to de-escalate his nuclear threats indicates their understanding of risk reduction. Now, that never happened. Putin hasn't made threats. Anytime he's mentioned it, it's because of the massive terrorist attacks of the U.S. into Russia. It's France and the U.S. that are moving nuclear weapons into Europe. Strangely, with minimal opposition, if you remember, in the 70s and 80s, a massive protest about nuclear weapons being brought to Germany, all of a sudden that's gone. I wonder, you know, that suggests to me that the regime controls these protests. The U.S. is upgrading its stores. At the same time, Putin has demanded that all nuclear stocks be reduced. This entire article, the Council on Foreign Relations, is meant for fear-mongering. It's mostly stories and lies. It doesn't really say anything new. And the U.S., if you want to use that stupid phrase, the guardrails, the U.S. has knocked them down. Both China and Russia are surrounded by enemies that seek its destruction. Now, the idea of providing Kiev with nuclear weapons, which is terrifying in and of itself, comes from that weirdo, what they call the extremist flank of Kiev's Western backers. They have no connection with reality. Now, this was written, New York Times came out with something just as the Biden administration was going out, that EU and American officials have suggested that whoever controls Joe Biden could give Ukraine nuclear arms as a, quote, security guarantee. This is something the Times says would be an instant and enormous deterrent. So they're in favor of this. Of course, all of this is, you know, anonymous sources. And it acknowledged the obvious that such a move would have complicated and serious implications. The Kremlin responded almost in disbelief. These provocations, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. These provocations are increasing tensions. It's not the Russians who are doing this. It's the West that's doing this. Talk about irresponsible. Transferring nuclear weapons to Kiev. A fourth world economy that's being depopulated. There's no responsible scientific units that could take care of these weapons whatsoever. They can't take care of their nuclear power plants, let alone weapons. The Kremlin said, and I'm quoting here, absolutely irresponsible deliberations by people who probably have a poor understanding of reality and who don't fear a shred of responsibility for the consequences of their proposals. And of course, all of these statements are anonymous. Now, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, came out against this, was well aware of this, kind of said what I said, just in a less sophisticated way, that this transfer would be insane and completely unconstitutional, possibly an act of treason. I strongly doubt this is ever going to happen. In a post on Twitter, she said whether the Biden administration is trying to start a nuclear war and use it as a reason to stop the transfer of power to Trump. That's when, November of 2024, Russia updated its nuclear doctrine. Now, of course, it didn't happen. It's not going to happen. But bringing this stuff up in a public forum, even by high-level people, is just more fear-mongering. Nuclear weapons, to a great extent, aren't all that necessary. The Oryshnik medium-range hypersonic ballistic missile is massive. It's been used a couple of times against Ukrainian military-industrial facilities, but only in response to the U.S.-made long-range weapons for attacks on Russian territory, civilian targets, of course. And that was the green light it was given from Washington, because nothing Kiev does exists without a green light from Washington. All of this is the regime's fault. This is the Pentagon's fault. Most of these huge increases in the defense budget are going to updating and upgrading, to the extent that this will even happen at all, we don't know, the nuclear weapons you find in North Dakota and Wyoming. Here's something else. This is from Newsweek in April of 2024. Again, not a reliable source of information, and we'll see why here in a minute. The point is to spread more fear over this nonsense. They mentioned Viktor Medvedchuk, who I think I've quoted once or twice over the years. They call him Vladimir Putin's friend, and they get into no more detail than that, as if he has some influence over him, which he does not. he said that he predicted that a nuclear strike would be most likely. And by the way, they give no indication of who this man is. Putin and senior Russian officials have repeatedly threatened nuclear escalation. They have not. And its Western partners since Moscow launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022. During Putin's annual State of the Nation address last month, again, this is, you know, more than a year ago, he warned that Russia's strategic nuclear forces are at a state of full readiness. Well, they should be, under the circumstances. The U.S. most certainly is not. And then he warned that there are no quotes anymore here. He warned that there was a genuine risk of nuclear war if Western nations send troops to Ukraine. And Macron has stated, he said he's gone back and forth on that many times. Russia doesn't need nuclear weapons to discourage that. We'll explain why here in a little bit. Macron continuously goes back and forth. And again, this is over a year ago, but he's been saying this stuff even up until fairly recently. He has said to a Czech news publication, Novinky, he said that France is not actively considering sending military forces to Ukraine because they would be defeated quickly. He said, in response to one question I was asked about sending troops, I said that nothing is out of the question. This doesn't mean that we're considering the possibility of sending French troops to Ukraine in the near future, but we are starting discussions and thinking about everything that we've done to support Ukraine, especially on Ukrainian territory. NATO is a paper tiger. Any troops that are sent there become combatants, and they're going to be destroyed. We know that many Western forces have been destroyed since they've been covertly in Ukraine, even in eastern Ukraine, firing, you know, rockets and everything else since the Ukrainians can't do it themselves. Well, Medvedchuk is a Soviet-era lawyer. He was, at least, you know, years ago, supported the Soviet system. He was a defense attorney, and a very bad one. He was Vasily Stus's defense attorney. Essentially served the Soviet system very well. Once the Soviet Union fell, he became a millionaire, which is very easy to do. But he was eventually disbarred once the, not too long after Maidan. He was exiled to Russia in 2022. Obviously, Medvedchuk is a Ukrainian name. It was an exchange for Ukrainian POWs. And he continues to say, like allegedly he has some connection to Putin, but it's most likely will happen because the West's demand for global dominance. He says, if the collective West continues to assert its rights to global dominance, Ukraine's human capital will not be enough in any case. If we continue the policy of war to the bitter end, where later foreign troops will have to be introduced, and most likely, we will be looking at a nuclear strike eventually. There is zero reason to say that. It isn't true, and he has no influence over Putin whatsoever. Then he says, and again, he is not an expert on international politics, military policy, or anything. He's a Soviet-era lawyer. He doesn't rule out the idea that countries outside of this conflict can become involved. He says that it's clear that the Arab world is being drawn into this war, meaning the Ukraine war. And after that, China and India will also be involved. I don't know on what grounds he says that. And then Newsweek says something incredibly stupid. They say Newsweek has reached out to the Russian Defense Ministry via email for comment. I wonder what the response was. Probably a big middle finger. Someone sat on the copy machine. Anyway, this time, you know, this was an older piece. Those who control Joe Biden, German Chancellor Scholz, and NATO Secretary Jens Stoltenberg, they have said that a direct Russia-NATO confrontation is unthinkable given the nuclear stakes. This may or may not be one of the reasons that foreign troops have not been directly. They are there, of course. But these are usually support men. Supporting the, you know, the use of, you know, patriots or whatever. You know, it's all been destroyed by now, but NATO leaders said that the West has between 3 and 10 years to prepare for war. I don't know where those figures come from. And this is at the same time they themselves are choosing targets for striking our territory. These are terror attacks because they're done against civilian infrastructure. Now, the Cato Institute is not something that I cite all that often. But I'm going to do it here. And this goes back to 2020. But he makes the same complaint I do. It's John Mueller. An article entitled Nuclear Alarmism, Proliferation, and Terrorism. It is, I think, this is, in my opinion, this is yelling fire in a crowded theater, to use another cliche. Constantly talking about World War III, that is, a nuclear exchange, without any evidence for it, any basis for it, coming up with stupid reasons for it. It's such a common currency in the foreign policy establishment. And this goes back many decades. I remember as a kid, people were talking about weapons going off accidentally or even intentionally by the wrong people. The planet will be destroyed and other nonsense. 1979, Hans Morgenthau said this. The world is moving towards a third world war, a strategic nuclear war. I do not believe that anything can be done to prevent it. The international system is simply too unstable to survive for long. That was in 1979. No one could possibly be more wrong. In the 80s, depending on the polls, between 20 and 37% of Americans said that they held the potential for nuclear war to be the most important problem facing the country. You had activists at Brown University demanding that their health service should stockpile suicide pills for immediate dispensation in the event of a nuclear attack for those who survived it. 1982, there was a book came out by Jonathan Schell, The Fate of the Earth, was also an essay, a shorter essay in The New Yorker. He poorly argued that nuclear war would be terrible. And he says, one day it's hard to believe that we will not be, that it will not be soon, but we will make our choice. Either we sink into a final coma and end it all, or as I trust and believe, we will awaken to the truth of our peril and rise up to cleanse the earth of nuclear weapons. Well, neither option was used. Neither a coma nor nuclear cleansing took place, and nothing has happened. Alarmism, shouting fire in a crowded theater, is irresponsible, but it's done for a purpose. You have people making these claims just to get readers. They think it makes them seem edgy, makes them seem... oh my God, is this really going to happen? It draws them in. We can't have this. It's everywhere. People who don't know the first thing about any of this are predicting it. Now, Mueller does mention a few salient facts. Nuclear proliferation has been far slower than is commonly predicted. And he makes a good point, because the weapons convey very little advantage to their possessor. They've never been used. Maybe it's just been to stoke their egos, to deter real or imagined threats. And then he makes an even better point, that wars have been fought for anti-proliferation that have killed far more people than would have been killed in a nuclear exchange. Trying to contain nuclear proliferation or WMDs, millions of people have been killed here. Well, how many would have been killed if nukes had been used? For decades. These people have been wrong. Many countries in the world can have, South Korea, Japan, they can build their own nuclear weapons in 2 minutes, but they haven't done so. Are these just virility symbols? I don't know. But these alarmist predictions going back decades, mass proliferation, these cascades and avalanches, they were all wrong. Proliferation of nuclear weapons, he says, has been far slower than predicted, because insofar as most leaders of the most countries have considered acquiring the weapons, they've not. They've come to appreciate several defects. The weapons are dangerous, distasteful, costly, and likely to upset their neighbors. And they're difficult to obtain. There hasn't been a military compelling or even a sensible reason to use these weapons, largely because of the inability to identify suitable targets or ones that could not be attacked effectively by conventional munitions. So they don't benefit anybody. I mean, Israel's nuclear weapons did not restrain the Arabs from attacking in 1973. Britain's arsenal didn't prevent Argentina from taking the Falklands. The tens of thousands of nuclear weapons in the arsenals of the Allied forces did not cause Saddam Hussein to order his occupying forces out of Kuwait. Nor did the possession of the bomb benefit the U.S. in Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, or Afghanistan, France and Algeria, or the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. It really doesn't matter very much. But that's not what's being said. The lies about Saddam Hussein are just one particular example of this sort of alarmism. He is not going to destroy his own country in using them, even if he possessed them. And keep in mind a point that I've made many times. In 1964, Mao Zedong was becoming the greatest mass murderer in all political history. He exploded his first weapon in 1964, that same year, and no one said a thing. Stalin received it not too long after World War II. No one said a thing. So how bad could it be? And of course, it's never been used. Even possessing nuclear weapons, it doesn't suggest that the countries around them will be intimidated and just bow to the owner's demands. What they'll do is they'll make common cause with each other. It seems likely that if nuclear Iran brandishes its weapons to intimidate others, it will find that though threatened, rather than capitulating to whatever it wants, or rushing off to build a compromising or compensating article of their own, will just ally with others, including even Israel, to stand up to the intimidation. Same thing occurred in Kuwait in 1990. This is a very good reason to reject this endless alarmism and fear-mongering. I've said before that even if Iran had a nuclear weapon, which it does not want and is not seeking, although God knows, maybe now, but even if they had it, what are they going to do with it? Anywhere in Israel that it hits, you're going to kill many Arabs and many Muslims. Their belief about radiation, which I think is faulty anyway, means that it's going to spread all over the place. But the same regime had no problem with Mao Zedong getting it in 1964. Even if, you know, if Saddam Hussein had something like that, with the Iranians, end up being forced to get it. They can't use it. They won't use it. If you remember back in 2008, Barack Obama said he would do everything in his power to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. Everything. And then John McCain said that Iran must be kept from obtaining nuclear weapons at all costs. Which you're not going to say what everything at all costs might mean. But these threats are being made all the time. Now, there's been one Iraq war starting in 1990 and continues right up until the murder of Saddam Hussein. This is just one long war. There isn't a 2003 and a 1990. It's one long, you know, the U.S. has been at war with Iran for that period of time. It escalated in 2003, but what was it? It was a militarized anti-proliferation effort. How many people were killed? How many people would be killed if Saddam Hussein had nuclear weapons? Well, probably zero. The war was meant to prevent Saddam Hussein from acquiring nuclear weapons. And of course, all these intelligence agencies, US, UK, were saying it was going to happen by 2004 or at the latest 2008. How many people have been killed in wars dedicated to fighting the proliferation of nuclear weapons? Clinton administration in 1994 was prepared to go to war with the miserable North Korean regime, and it was miserable at that point, to prevent its nuclear development. That would have been suicidal even at that point. But how many people would be killed in a full-scale war on that peninsula? 1946, Oppenheimer said, 3 or 4 men could smuggle in units for an atomic bomb, and hence they could destroy New York. And ever since then, it started this terrorist nonsense. A nuclear physicist by the name of Theodore Taylor explained how easy it would be to steal nuclear material and step by step make it into a weapon. And he thought it was pretty much too late to prevent the making of a few bombs here and there, now and then, or in 10 or 15 years, it would be too late. 4 decades after this, 5 decades, we continue to wait for these terrorists, so-called, to carry out their easy task And of course, these terrorists are largely the creation of the U.S. If you remember, after 9/11, one of the big slogans, you know, alarmism reached its peak because Al-Qaeda was now going to create a nuclear weapon and use it randomly somewhere in the West. The U.N. Ambassador John Negroponte said there'd be a high probability that within 2 years Al-Qaeda would attempt to attack using a nuclear or other weapon of mass destruction. Books came out like Graham Allison in 2004 saying the terrorist attack using a nuclear weapon is more likely than not. They actually believe that these groups can manufacture a nuclear weapon themselves from stolen materials. These so-called nuclear experts talk about this stuff all the time. You imagine people being so stupid. Do you know what kind of a scientific establishment you would need to not just create a nuclear weapon, but maintain it and use it properly? These weapons are huge, cumbersome, unsafe, unreliable, unpredictable, and inefficient. So much scientific work has to be done. These groups would have to be very advanced scientifically, which they are not, to create and maintain such weapons. You would need an industrial economy to do this. No one's giving them a workable weapon. Christoph Wirtz and Emanuel Egger, they're two physicists in charge of nuclear issues at Switzerland's Spice Laboratory, said a few years earlier than this that these so-called terror groups could hardly be accomplished, getting nuclear weapons could hardly be accomplished by a subnational group. The precision that's necessary is too much for any subnational group. It is not easy work. The extremely exacting scientific methods, the technical requirements in several fields, and the economy needed to support it are simply unfeasible. Joe Younger, I think, from Los Alamos, made fun of some of these ridiculous claims. He said that self-declared nuclear weapons experts, many of whom have never seen a real nuclear weapon, and who hold forth on how easy it is to make a functioning nuclear explosive, they think it's very easy to do this. People who know say it is extremely difficult. And the idiot Walter LaCour, a leftist phony and a Jew, he said in 1996, almost certainly terrorist groups will use WMDs in the foreseeable future. Said that in 1996, and of course it's never occurred. But especially after 9/11, this was a constant alarmist slogan from the regime. To this day, none of these groups have developed one. Now, maybe they have used chemical weapons, but of course so has the Israelis, so has the U.S., so has the Ukrainians. Now, I'm going to end this. This is an unsigned article. It came out a few years ago. And it requires basically a high school chemistry education to understand about the nature of this alarmism. Now, this writer claims that a nuclear weapon is not really what we think it is. It's simply a large bomb. There are problems with the whole image of nuclear weapons and the nature of radiation. He does stress the Jewish nature of it. Germany, 1938. Otto Hahn, Lise Meitner, Fritz Strassmann, all Jews. They allegedly discovered nuclear fission, and they made the nuclear age possible. The idea is that when an atom of radioactive material splits into lighter atoms, there's a sudden, powerful release of energy. Shortly after, the Manhattan Project, which was envisioned by the FDR, only came into existence when he heard that Germany was allegedly developing or weaponizing this new atomic technology. And then the Manhattan Project itself, Enrico Fermi, who, of course, not a Jew, his wife was, and Leo Szilard, who is a Jew, required funding to start their research on what they called radioactive isotope separation, which is uranium enrichment. and nuclear chain reactions at Columbia. So officially, Manhattan Project started in 1942. The propaganda that came after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I wasn't alive then, but children in classrooms in the 50s and 60s were hiding under tables and desks. In the 80s, late 70s and 80s as a kid, I was featured to movies about what radiation would be like, what a nuclear weapon would do. But the fear that prevented the Cold War from turning into a world war was what they called mutually assured destruction. Now, I don't think there was much of a Cold War, not if you're trading and profiting off of each other. But there was this fear of weapons so powerful that they could wipe out a city. And even worse, the fear of global destruction, the end of life as we know it. But this was psychological manipulation. The nuclear war could wipe out the entire planet. The notion of the dark winter, the nuclear winter, a nuclear fallout which would last for decades, even centuries. Go back to the most primitive ages, Mad Max style, roving bands. That would be the result. It was only in Japan, 1945, first and only time such a weapon was allegedly used in war. But sometimes we forget that many weapons have been detonated in Nevada, Alaska, New Mexico, all over the Pacific Ocean, Algeria, Australia, China, North Korea, India, Pakistan, Kazakhstan, and many more places. In fact, the number of explosions of nuclear weapons in their development, 8 nations have detonated 2,056 of these weapons. And yet with that many exploded all over the planet, we don't suffer from selective fallout or nuclear winter. It's because global nuclear fallout is largely mythical. Now, you know what I think about Chernobyl. I've written on it as well as did several shows on it. Now, these are massive weapons, but they don't do what the regime says that they do. Yes, they could do great damage in a few cities. It's estimated today maybe there are 14,000 nuclear warheads on Earth. Over 2,000, like I say, nuclear bombs have been detonated in the last 80 years. No big crisis. And you could go to all these test sites today, or even just after it was exploded, and suffer no ill effects. I went on and on in Chernobyl about how people went in there with no equipment, and some of them are still alive today. Most of them, in fact, are still alive today. Nuclear weapons don't exist as they're normally described. They are huge bombs, and they're nothing more. Radiation, the way it's described, is largely fictional. And it has to do, it's another level of creating state control and fear. Nuclear bombs are simply hugely explosive weapons. I mean, they're measured in TNT equivalents. Atomic weapons use plutonium and uranium to create an explosion, but in and of themselves, those two, I mean, plutonium and uranium are virtually harmless. Heavy water, you've heard that phrase before, it's just water with more hydrogen. It's not related to nuclear weapons, it's just an analogy. Heavy water is composed of deuterium, or heavy hydrogen. Deuterium is a naturally occurring isotope of hydrogen, has double the mass or weight of that element, hence heavy. And it makes water composed of it heavier, hence heavy water. Uranium is a naturally occurring element, 92 on the periodic table, number of protons. Uranium is rare, has the highest weight of all the elements of the periodic table, has the most protons and neutrons. U-238 has 146 neutrons in its nucleus. The number of those can vary from 141 to 146. The five isotopes of uranium, 233U, 234, 235, 236, and 238. All those isotopes are slightly radioactive. What does that mean, though? It means that atoms emit some ionizing radiation. There's a problem with the concept that it would create radioactive fallout in a massive way. Yes, uranium is found rarely in nature, in small quantities, found a nuclear weapon. Such a bomb is detonated, it doesn't create more of these atoms, it just spreads them equally over a large area. Could this create ionizing radiation? Sure. But at that level, it wouldn't affect anybody. Any place, and all the over 2,000 explosions of nuclear weapons, you can go there. And people did go there without the slightest problem. Ionizing radiation, it's formed by high-energy particles, photons, electrons. It can penetrate matter and ionize, or form ions by losing electrons. Target atoms to form ions. But high-energy particles that can penetrate matter, and ionize. Well, the human body does it all the time. The NCBI wrote an article. They say free radicals and other ROS are derived either from normal essential metabolic processes in the human body, from external sources such as exposure to X-rays, ozone, cigarette smoking, air pollutants, and industrial chemicals. Free radicals are the effects of ionizing radiation. They're normal biological processes. Radioactive particles, simply natural particles that have a chance of emitting free radicals. Because uranium and plutonium are so heavy, since they have so many electrons, there is a chance of losing some of these, which can cause some cellular damage. That's true. But radiation is very similar, if not identical, to the free radicals that our bodies experience every day. Last quarter of the 20th century, the scientific community accepted the idea, the fundamental principle, same free radicals that were formed as a result of ionizing radiation interacting with biological material were also formed as byproducts of oxidative metabolism. That's what occurs when you go for a walk in the park or run to any cardiovascular activity. When you're listening to this, it's what's happening in your brain. It's essential. It's simply metabolism. Radiation is the same as free radicals caused by your own body's normal functioning. It's not a mysterious and deadly toxin. Radiation from a so-called nuclear weapon is not some invisible aerosol, not some deadly toxin floating around in the air that can make anyone who comes near it instantly sick. That's fantasy. And I want to quote somebody, an academic who understands this, Galen Windsor, was a nuclear physicist who worked at and helped design nuclear power plants in Hanford, Washington, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Morris, Illinois, San Jose, California, and Wilmington, New Jersey. He was also part of the Manhattan Project. He came out of Brigham Young University in chemistry. And in 2014, which I think is when he died, he was an expert in measuring and controlling nuclear fuel inventory and storage. Here's what he said. He was interviewed in 2014. He said, "Can nuclear radiation cause mutation in people and animals?" He responded, "If a cell gets too much radiation, it dies. So if a sperm or an oocyte, or a cell to an ovary, why, they die. They don't reproduce. There are no mutations. I think the good Lord built that safety factor in." So he was asked, "So you're saying that mutation in future generations is an unfounded fear?" He responded, "Yes. And the studies that people survived at Hiroshima and Nagasaki have borne that out. They don't have any, they don't have any of that. They don't have, you know, if nuclear radiation is just some extra free radicals, molecules with unpaired electrons that cause damage on a microscopic level, you get those all the time. Chernobyl, which is, as I truly believe, is fictional and pure propaganda. Thermonuclear weapons, hydrogen bombs use a hydrogen explosion. It's a huge blast, but that's usually what they mean by thermonuclear. They're just big hydrogen weapons. Dirty bombs that supposedly spread radiation instead of causing destruction. These are largely the realm of myth. Most analysts say that the use of a dirty bomb is more psychological than physical, and that is very true. What happened after Chernobyl is that people went psychologically out of their minds. They were getting sick solely from a belief that they would get sick. They would take action out of panic. If a so-called dirty bomb is detonated, if they're told one is detonated, and only if the news reports on it will pretty much anyone be impacted at all. Regardless of whether or not a dirty bomb is detonated, if the news says one is, then the impacts are nearly identical, regardless if a real one was detonated or not. It's fear that caused destruction, the so-called radiation. In Ukraine, in Belarus, after 86, people were blaming everything that happened to them on radiation poisoning. Anytime anyone got sick, the real tragedy, so many abortions were taking place because they were terrified that if they lived anywhere near the so-called nuclear explosion, it was not a nuclear explosion, that their babies would be born with, you know, three arms and stuff like that. The real problem here is that it's prevented the cheapest and cleanest form of energy, nuclear power. That's the only thing that Saddam Hussein and the Iranians ever wanted. The oil's not going to last forever. Nuclear weapons, dangers of nuclear radiation are largely mythical. There's no radioactive fallout, and this applies to nuclear power plants. I want to quote Windsor again here. He was asked, in your estimation, how dangerous is a nuclear reactor plant? And he responded, nuclear reactor plant is just a way to boil water. It's the cleanest, neatest, most economical way to boil water you've ever seen. So in my estimation, nuclear reactors ought to be insured under the same insurance policy as any other steam boiler plant, power generating plant, to have any special consideration under the Price-Anderson Act. That means that the insurance industry has already paid off Congress that they can have a ripoff, charging ever in higher extreme insurance premiums, total coverage much greater for a non-existent risk. After Chernobyl, where very few, if anyone, was actually harmed by radiation, it shut down the entire nuclear industry in France and places like Sweden. So what is melting down? Simply comes down to the rods overheated, and that caused damages to the equipment. It doesn't really mean much of anything. There's no danger from a nuclear power plant melting down, other than the fact that it generates a lot of electricity, which would be cut off. There's no danger of an explosion, or no more so than any explosion that we have in any other piece of machinery that's mishandled. Windsor was also asked, could a nuclear plant explode? And he said, well, only like any other steam plant, like Laughlin, Nevada, had a steam explosion. It's a coal-fired plant. Six men were killed there last year, so 2013. That could happen in a nuclear plant, but as far as an atomic explosion, good heavens, no, no way. Keep in mind, Galen Windsor made a name for himself by eating pieces of uranium and plutonium on camera. He also swam in some of these nuclear reactors that he helped create. He swam in their wastewater. You know, they collected in pools, and he'd swim laps in them. He died at the age of 84. He would drink it. He said, this is harm, and there's nothing you can do about that. He was there. People talked about it. There are videos of it, of Galen Windsor swimming in the nuclear wastewater plants, heavy water plants, the pools that are created. But because of the lies and myths of nuclear radiation, places like Chernobyl became this global incident. There were people who walked right in, right afterwards, with no hazmat or anything else, who came out no problem. Most of these people lived long lives after that. It's not a nuclear explosion. There was no such thing. They're just steam facilities. They're the safest and cleanest form of energy. It's simply steam energy. It's as safe as any hydroelectric dam. That could blow up too. Now, I've spoken of Chernobyl many times before. There were radioactive substances released into the atmosphere, which in and of itself wouldn't have done much harm, but the panic that was ensued, and because the USSR shut down any discussion on it, the alarmists went crazy. The media went nuts, talking about hundreds of thousands killed. The British media said in Chernobyl, the bodies of thousands of people were buried in ditches. They made it up. Thousands of people did not die as a result of that. People live in that area now. There was an exclusion zone of maybe a kilometer around. There's no mutation. There's nothing like that. It was an artificial city dedicated to that plant. So when the plant shut down, there was no reason to live there anymore. That's not because of radiation or anything else. Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, they had no effect on health, negative. They panicked. There was no increase in genetic abnormalities. Go to my Chernobyl discussion on Radio Albion. I went into more detail. The fact that Windsor would drink the water from nuclear waste and swim in it for a long time, he showed exactly what's going on here. Even like, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the worst, the destruction of Japan was done by firebombing. Those were nothing compared with the massive slaughter of civilians, the greatest war crime of all time, in a country whose residential areas were made of wood and paper. Now, people very close to the supposed center of the explosion did not show signs of irradiation. Anyone nearby was unharmed by the blast, by the heat, by the radiation. The city was built on the same place right away, as if there were no lasting effects. A 1990 study, and in my paper here I have the link to it, and the New York Times comment on it, Hiroshima and Nagasaki survivors and their descendants found no noticeable genetic damage or cancer increases. But this is not what we were led to believe. There was no fallout in Chernobyl. In the desert and all these testing sites, they detonate nuclear weapons in the thousands. No lasting harm to local wildlife or plants, because nuclear radiation is not a huge problem. Nuclear weapon isn't what we've been told. They are huge weapons, but they're not these planet-destroying entities. Nuclear weapons don't do what we've been told that they do. Meltdowns are a hoax. Nuclear radiation itself is effectively a hoax. And yet, we're told this stuff because using this World War III fear-mongering crap is a very easy way to control a population, to justify the attacks on Iran or Iraq, killing more people that would have been killed even if there were a nuclear exchange of some kind. Now, most of the elites in the world don't know this or don't believe this, so no one's going to use these weapons anyway. Russia's Oryshnik is a massive weapon. It could do just as much damage as anything in their arsenal. So why go nuclear then? Now, of course, chemical biology, that's a different story. But essentially, nuclear weapons are treated as if they're chemical weapons, and they certainly are not. The mushroom cloud nonsense, that's created all the time. Even volcanoes produce them. Mushroom clouds are from any large explosion made by atmospheric layers, basic physics. But despite the mythology about nuclear weapons and everything else, the myth still maintains and is still used to create fear and hence to justify these insane policies. Lies and storytelling about Putin's so-called threats, which were never made. It was only the West that made these threats, not so much in verbiage, but by moving their weapons closer and closer to Russia. And then they complain when the Russians respond. Ukraine is using terrorist methods to destroy civilian targets. This is why Putin acts the way he does. There's never any context to any of this. The entire thing is typical regime nonsense, and it's an excellent example of Johnson's Law. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.